Yeah, I was thinking how we just take so many things for granted. I wish I were simpler, to where I just was amazed. Want to continue being amazed by amazing things God has done. There's that story about what if the stars only came out every 1,000 years. I thought that was a little it was kind of proving a separate point, but before I knew where the author was going, I thought, well, what if the stars only came out every 10 or 20 years, you know, you'd stay up all night. Like, it'd be a real big deal. Anyway, stars, and it's a beautiful morning. There's something I want to talk about, so I'm going to get on track to talk about it, and then if it goes right, I'm going to get off track real quick, and then hopefully get back on track. But if I could get you thinking about this idea, see if you can relate to it, where you read a Bible story, and this could happen with any story, but let's think about Bible stories, especially stories relating to God and God's people. It's easy to read these stories and be like, man, how could they complain about manna? How could they be so ungrateful right after that thing happened? How could Adam and Eve do what they did? And then even further, we might think, I wouldn't have done that. I would have behaved. I would have done different. I would have been more thankful. I would have been. I would have done better than them. And I guess the thing that I try to exercise myself in is the whole point of those stories is that I'm not any different than them. If it's it might as well be a story about me, and say, well, one time when God gave you this opportunity, this is what you did, and then God forgave you and gave you another opportunity, and you squandered it again, and that is what I did, and it's what all of us, in some way or another, have done, are bound to do. It's in our human nature. Think of the especially unbelieving Jews in the days of Jesus. You're just like, how could people see the miracles he did, hear the things that he said, and not believe? And I think, and I'm about to get off track here, but part of the thing that's trying to be communicated there is the power of the Jewish culture, the power of religious culture. It was so powerful that in the face of Messiah, they turned back to their religion. Rejecting the messenger of the one they're supposedly, they rejected Jesus because they wanted to serve God, you know, this backwards thing. But that it's the power of culture, and I want to get off track just barely and talk about the power of culture. I guess about the Jews, they were devoted to Moses and his laws, but they didn't really have a true devotion to the lawgiver. And so when I'm talking about culture, that's the thing I wanna. I'm not talking about. Usually we talk about lifestyle, clothing, things like that when we talk about culture. And those things should come out of something else, not. If we're devoted to God, and out of our devotion to God, we end up acting a certain way, talking a certain way, dressing a certain way, living a certain way, then that's good. But if we just get hung up on living that certain way without the devotion, that can be bad. It will be bad. we sing that song. I've decided to follow Jesus, and one of the verses is, though no one join me, still I will follow. And that's powerful. That's a powerful claim. That's a big claim. I'll do it all alone. And the implication there is it is really hard to do something all alone. And they're saying, hey, I'll even do this really hard thing of doing it all alone. The implication there is it's a lot easier when you don't have to do it alone. Just as powerful as I'd serve Jesus even if no one joined me. It's just as powerful for us, our fellowship in saying, hey, you're not alone. I'm drinking of that same cup. I'm with you. There's a power in culture. As parents, it's our job to create a culture for our children, whether it's in our homes or in our fellowships. It's very powerful. It's a human need. This is why the human testimony is very relatable. When someone tells you their story, or when you hear someone's story, there's something in you that says, "Hey, that's the same thing that happened to me." It's comforting. It's powerful. Or somebody says, "Hey, I could do that." Like somebody says, I took these steps and now there's this big change in my life. Somebody says, well, I could do those same things. It's relatable. It's also relatable for someone to, the prophet did this one time. He told a story and then he made it relatable and said, "This story is actually about you." The guy said, "Oh, what a bad thing to do." And the prophet said, "Well, you've done the same thing." This is the power of culture and relatable things. Okay, I want to read a little story here. Just a quick one. It's a story about a boy who had to cross a vast desert. There were no watering holes along the way. And so, whenever he needed a drink, he had to stop and dig a well with his bare hands. After he had dug several of these watering holes, his hands were cut and bloody, but he went on. When he finally got to the other side, he was completely worn out. A month later, this boy watched as another boy walked out of the desert. The second boy had taken the exact same route as the first boy, but he looked fresh and happy, skipping along with a huge bunch of flowers in his arms. "How could you cross the desert and look so fresh and cool?" the first boy asked. "And where did you get those flowers? I didn't see a single one when I crossed just a month ago." The second boy answered, "Oh, the way is beautiful. There are many small wells brimming with cool water along the way. And around each well there are flowers and shady bushes. It was easy to cross. Didn't you see them?" Didn't you see them? Anyway, I read that to relate to the comforting power of our influence over each other and that our culture has. I want to especially address, see if I can say this right, older young people, but you're older. And if you're wondering if there's anybody you can think of that's younger than you, then I'm talking to you. That means you. So that would apply to parents. It's all of us, but especially if you'd get that, older young people. It occurred to me one time how that in our fellowship, the older children are helping the parents raise the younger children. We can't, unless I move away, you older young people, my younger people that are younger than you are looking at you. They're watching you. They're listening to what you talk about. They're watching how you spend your money. They're looking at how you treat each other, how you treat your parents, how you behave at home. And it's like that. It's like the boy in that story. Every one of your decisions, you're digging a well and making the way, whether it's a good way or a bad way. And it's going to be that much easier for someone else coming behind you because they want to be like you and they're going to be like you. They're excited about the things. They're looking at you like, "Wow, I'm going to be older like them and then I'll get to do this thing. I'm going to do like that." You're paving the way. You're opening doors, opening eyes. It's a big responsibility. It's something to take very seriously. Your choices can be a comfort to others if you're choosing the hard way, the difficult way, the righteous way, the way of God, then when somebody else gets there and they're like, "Oh, this is so difficult," they'll be reminded, "Oh, but so and so did it." That'll be a comfort to them. Look, they did the right thing, they went the right way, and look, and things have you know, they're. And that's how I want to be. I want to be like them. It makes things, our culture, when we're in it together, it makes it easier, and it's a comfort. The world is pulling, and we can comfort each other and help each other. Okay, I want to try to get back on track. That was a side note. So I want to especially... we'll read this. This is one of Jesus' parables. Matthew 21. There was a certain householder which planted a vineyard and hedged it round about and digged a winepress in it and built a tower and let it out to husbandmen and went into a far country. And when the time of the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen that they might receive the fruits of it. And the husbandmen took his servants and beat one and killed another and stoned another. Again, he sent other servants more than the first, and they did unto them likewise. But last of all, he sent unto them his son, saying, they will reverence my son. But when the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and let us seize on his inheritance. And they caught him and cast him out of the vineyard and slew him. When the Lord, therefore, of the vineyard cometh, what will he do unto the husbandmen? They say unto him, he will miserably destroy those wicked men, and will let out his vineyard unto other husbandmen, which shall render him the fruits in their seasons. Jesus saith unto them, did ye never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore I say unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a nation, bringing forth the fruit thereof. Now I hope we could read that story and say, why would they do that? Why would these husbandmen do that? Why would they were given this amazing thing? There's kind of, I don't understand about these things. It says he planted a vineyard. He hedged it round about. I think that means a fence. If it's a sizable vineyard, that's a big deal. Digged a wine press in it. That sounds like a big deal. Built a tower. I don't quite know what those things mean, but the impression I get is like, this is a big thing. This is not the thing an average husbandman could do. This was a very wealthy man to accomplish this thing. And then he just gives it to these husbandmen. This thing, they could have never planted a vineyard and hedged it round about and dug a wine press and built a tower. They could have never done that thing, and yet it was handed to them. And he just wanted the fruit, and they were going to benefit greatly. They had just great employment in this vineyard. And I hope we can hear that story. I think we're supposed to hear that story and think to ourselves, well, I mean, if somebody gave me a vineyard like that, I'd be really faithful. I'd totally give him the fruit. I mean, what an amazing opportunity. How could they squander it? How could they be so selfish? I hope we'd think that. And then like the prophet, I hope we can say to ourselves, you know, thou art the man. Because we have been given a vineyard. I like to think of that vineyard as my life, my hands, my mouth. These are things that I could. God gave me these hands. God gave me this mouth. God gave me this life. I didn't come up with it. I didn't earn it. It was just handed to me. Each one of us is handed this precious opportunity. These precious tools. Just of immense value. They're a gift to you, to us, and yet they belong to God, right? They're rightfully His. The fruit of it is rightfully His. This wonderful gift has been given to us, and yet the fruit of it rightly belongs to Him. And He wants certain fruits. He's sent His Son to teach us about the fruit that He wants to come out of this vineyard. Each one of us. If you can hear me, you have a vineyard that you've been given, and the fruit is not for you. It's for Him. If we could just lay hold of like this idea, but I'm just a servant. I was created to serve. God just made me because He wanted me to do something. Like that's my job. That's what I was made for. Now the world calls us. The world would say something like. The devil would say something like, "Hey, that's a nice vineyard you got there. You could really do well for yourself with a vineyard like that. I could, you know, you could be rich, you could be famous, people could like you. There's this whole world out there that says if you use your vineyard in these ways, you'll get all these things. There's ourself that wants to use our vineyard, our lives and our bodies that God has given us for ourselves. But they're not for us. They're His, and He sent His Son. Every time a preacher gets up here and tries to preach at us, He's saying, "Bring forth the fruit for the Master." And we can either do that, or we can, if we don't bring forth the fruit God wants us to do, it's like stoning the servants. It's like stoning the Son of God Himself. That was all that I had to share. Be thankful for any comments or corrections.
Thank you, Brother Buddy. Very profound, simple, but deep. You know, why did God make us? Right? To bring glory to Him and not to ourselves. One comment about the culture as you started out, I was just thinking of the Sabbath. I was listening to the tape this morning on John 9 and 10, Gospel of John, where it talked about, I guess they were plucking grain on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees get upset, and you know how the Jews said, God said, you can't do any work in the Sabbath. Man was stoned for picking up sticks, and they had some other, you can't kindle a fire on a Sabbath, and so many rules, but Jesus, when he healed on the Sabbath, the blind man, and he said, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And later he said, I am greater than the temple, and then he is greater than Solomon and even Moses. And that was just blasphemy to say that. But their eyes were blinded. As he did all those miracles you referred to, buddy, they still couldn't see the power of God. And I know you know all that, but still, we should be reminded that he did things that no one else did. And even, you know, when David ate the showbread, that was bad. He brought that up. But I heard when, I don't know, you'd know, you brothers would know, Atlee, Walter, Green, Buddy, you'd know, but raw grain, if you eat raw grain, you are hungry. You must be really famished. You know what raw grain tastes like, Madelmo? It tastes like sand, and it sticks to your mouth like peanut butter. And so they were so hungry that they were eating raw grain, and they complained about it. The Lord be magnified.
Yeah, I just want to say amen and thank you, too, for short and sweet lesson and a lot to think about. A lot of you and I, buddy, talked about, you know, how much a preacher should just put out the dots and let others connect them, or how much the preacher should try to connect them for people. I think you really just put out the dots there, and there's lots to connect that we could connect. And but one of those big things is to remember what we were created for or sent for, and that is to be a servant. And one of the thoughts I had, it's partly because I was just thinking along these lines this morning, is so Jesus, he was sent to be a king. And yet there was a specific way that he was to acquire this kingdom, and that was sent to be a servant. And he knew that. And though, you know, he was offered by, when you said that thing about the this thing that we've been given, the devil would like to come and say something like, "Hey, you can make this something great for you. You can become rich. You can become famous. You can really." That's what made me think of how, like, oh, that's kind of like the devil came to Jesus, and kind of knowing he was a king, he offered him kingdoms. He said, "Hey, these are mine. I give them to you." He was offered to be a king by men. The men wanted to take him by force and make him a king, and he ran away to Satan. He said, "Get behind me. This is not what I got. This is not how I was sent to acquire a kingdom. Get behind me." To the men who tried to take him by force and make him a king, he ran away. He just slipped out through the crowds and disappeared. Like, no, I'm not taking the devil or men's advice on how to produce, how to become this thing, but I'm doing it the way the Father wants me to do it, and that was through humbling himself and becoming a servant. And so that's so much how we just need to remember what we were made for, and how our King, Lord, Maker instructs us to get there, or in your story, how to bear fruit. So, thank you.
There's a few verses here that go with what Brother Buddy said. Chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians, it says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come." And then in Romans 15, it says, "We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification. For even Christ pleased not himself, but, as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached thee fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." And then Matthew 23. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because ye build the tombs of the prophets, and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Wherefore ye be witness unto yourselves that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers. How can ye escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets, and wise men, and scribes, and some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them shall ye scourge in your synagogues, and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias son of Berechias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar." It's very easy to look at them and say, I look at those examples and I'm very different, and I would never have killed the prophets. But as Buddy was speaking there, I was thinking about this passage. Like, yeah, we are just like them. So may God have mercy on us and help us not to waste the opportunities He gave us. And bear the fruits.